Hello and a warm welcome to a new episode of Inside VC, the podcast from Digital Compact, dealing with venture capital and investors. With me, I'm Joel Kaczmarek, is also Christian. Hello, Christian.
Hi, Joel.
Maybe one sentence about you for all of those who missed the first two episodes of our podcast.
Yes, I'm a general partner with eVentures, and we're a venture capital firm that's investing in consumer internet and software companies pretty much across a number of continents, but I look after the European business.
Today, our topic is communication. I pretty much stumbled into this topic talking with Christian Nagel from Early Bird. We're doing a podcast, and afterwards we're talking about communication, and he said, you know, it's often so hard to communicate as a VC because most of the time you send out passes, passing people and telling them that you won't invest in them. So this is why I thought about how do a VC communicate and how does a startup ideally should communicate with the VC. It probably does make sense to separate pre-VC phase and during the investment. So let's start with before meeting an investor or before doing an investment together. We said something about first contact already in our first episode, but maybe let's say the top three things you would recommend a young founder or maybe also an experienced one when dealing with a VC. How do you communicate before knowing a VC?
Generally, I think the best way to get in touch is first of all to avoid sending cold emails to the info ad address or anything of that sort and try and get some kind of intro. A typical way that's often recommended is to go through an entrepreneur that's already backed by this particular VC you want to talk to, or some other acquaintance or a person you can identify who has a personal relationship with the investor you want to get to. If that is difficult to do, then if you do approach somebody cold, at the very least try and tailor your approach, whether it's email or phone or whatever, to that person by saying, look, we're doing this and that, and we notice you have invested in companies X, Y, and Z, and here's why we believe then you should also be interested in us. So if you can't get there in a personal way, then at least try and tailor it as much as you can.
I guess there are dozens of articles telling about how do I do this, yeah? And do not send 10 megabyte attachments. Maybe this has changed by now because thanks to Google Mail. But let's go a little bit deeper. First meeting. Let's say the VC reacted to your first communication, says, okay, let's have a meeting. What is expected in this meeting? What do I show and how do I act?
What you want to get out of the first meeting is to get the VC excited about you and the business you want to create. So you want to not bombard the investor with too many facts and details about what you want to do, but you want to make sure you get through your entire pitch and have a chance to paint the complete picture of what market you're going to address, why you think it's interesting, what specifically you're doing, how it's differentiated, and how it can become a great business, and why you think you and your team are the right people to do that. And it's important that you get through all of this so you aren't stuck on slide number two for most of the meeting and can really deliver sort of this entire message. Once you have the VC excited and generally interested in your space, in your market, in your value proposition, then you can get into all the detail in the follow-on meetings. But really, the purpose of the first meeting is to create appetite into what you're doing.
Does it differ, by the way, from the level I approach? If there's an associate sitting next to me or a partner, does it make a difference how to communicate?
I think the key thing is to get a sense for how well does the person I'm talking to know my market segment and the type of company I'm running. And you have to tailor your pitch in the right way so that somebody who is very familiar because he might have co-investments in adjacent segments doesn't get bored, and you then have to speed up and really get a little deeper. Or if it's somebody who you feel doesn't have too much prior exposure in your specific field, then you stay a little bit more high level and paint the great picture and maybe spend a bit more time on explaining why the particular market you're in is generally interesting. I'm not sure this differs between partner and associate. I really think it depends more on the, you know, level of knowledge that the specific investment professional has of your segment.
Is it a bad sign if an associate or a venture partner is sitting in this meeting and not a partner?
No, I don't think so at all. I honestly think actually very often it is better to meet with associates first, because if you think about it, you know, the partners have usually, if they've been with a firm for a long time, a large portfolio that they have to look after. And the biggest risk to getting a deal done, if let's say you have general interest, is maintaining the full attention from whoever is the person championing you. If your champion is a partner, the chances that he gets distracted with a transaction in his portfolio, a company that's being sold, or just problems in one of his portfolio companies are quite significant. If you have an associate, the associate is typically more focused on sourcing, more focused on getting deals to the finish line. So if you get that particular person excited, at least the risk of the attention fading away is usually much smaller. You could argue that it's not the ultimate decision maker, but even a partner usually has to convince his other partners. And getting an associate to really like what you're doing and constantly push you and position you inside the partnership can be very valuable, and at least as good a way as going to a partner directly.
What would you recommend for a follow-up then? Let's say the first meeting went well, general interest is there. Usually what I witness is that the partner or the person sitting in that meeting takes the topic into some kind of meeting with all his partners, associates and venture partners in the VC firm. But from a founder's perspective, how do I behave after this first meeting? What's the ideal way of following up? Or does this happen naturally that the VC is coming, like, don't call us, we call you?
Well, the first sort of almost trivial point, but it's nevertheless important, is that you ideally define some next steps in the meeting already. So you decide on when are you going to hear back from the VC, and are you supposed to call him? Are you maybe even already setting up a call? Or, you know, is he going to call you? That's the most basic thing to do. What I find stunning is that, unfortunately, things get lost between the cracks. I really try and make an effort to get back to entrepreneurs, but sometimes you just miss it. You forget about it. You know, you drop the ball for whatever reason. And there's a lot of people who don't follow up, or maybe they write one email. And so I have actually started to tell people in the meeting to specifically get on my nerves if I'm not coming back, because you want that. And it's you're surprised by how some people feel like, oh, you know, he hasn't responded, he hasn't come back, so he's probably not interested. No, go for it. Push the people and put them in a situation where they have to say no, because you will never have a first meeting very rarely, where people tell you, we don't like your business, we're not going to invest. You're always going to get a positive, supportive, non-committal message. And so you got to bring people into a position where they either tell you no, and you want to hear it from them, or yeah, you know, then they have to come up with next steps. But if people don't get back to you, make sure you follow up, you call them. Obviously, after 3 phone calls at some point, maybe the message is clear. But get to that point.
I mean, as you said, this aspect with being non-committal, I get the impression a lot of founders tell me, you know, a VC usually doesn't say no. They always say maybe, or yeah, let's talk as soon as you have numbers, or as soon as a second investor is interested. So they always try to keep the door open in a way, but usually they're not interested, but afraid of saying no. Is this
another way to look at it is, you know, a VC always tries to keep his options open. And that can have a number of reasons. One is that you say, first of all, I don't have time right now. I have a few other things on my desk. I think this is generally interesting, but I cannot prioritize it enough to kind of really drive it to a decision right now. So then you want to keep your options open so you can potentially get back to it. That's one thing, and sort of the closest time frame. The other thing is you say, well, you know, it sounds interesting, but I'm not completely convinced. Maybe I talk to some of my partners, whatever, and then maybe I get convinced, or I ask some people on the market. And you want to kind of keep it a little bit warm so that you have the opportunity to come back once you maybe get more convinced that this is a good investment. The third thing is more of a midterm aspect, which is very valid, where you say, look, this is maybe too early for us because you're, you know, more a Series A investor and this is a seed company. You say, I like to come back to this. I like to stay in touch. But right now, it is too early. And that, I think, makes a lot of sense. Also, because then when you do come back to the investor, you have the benefit of showing what you've done since the last meeting. And then we always say you get a movie instead of a picture as an investor. And that's a good thing, assuming the company has more or less delivered on what they have promised in the initial meeting.
Usually, does it happen that I meet an investor and during, let's say, 3 months, I have an investment or I do not have one? Because quite a few founders I spoke to said, I was talking to my investors for 3 years. And then we found a situation where it did make sense for them to invest and it did make sense for us to take up money.
Yeah, I do think, though, that still that is the exception. So I think if I look at our portfolio, we have one or two of these cases where companies were bootstrapped for quite some time or so, and then at some point it was the right time to invest. But most of the companies, it's sort of a, you know, they go out, they raise, and they close with somebody, and it's a few-month process. But I think it's becoming less and less of this you've been around as a company, at some point it's the right time for investment, just because you have more founders now who go out with a mindset of raising capital.
So the usual time span between first contact and signature under the contract is like 4 to 6 months, or what would you say?
No, I think it's shorter. A regular process, I would say, is about 3 months, you know, on average. If you have mastered the art, it can be as short as a few days. You know, if you have traction, if there's something that puts pressure on the investors, it can be really short. But I would say a regular process takes about 3 months. If you think about it, it's how can you make sure you become top of the stack of the investor? Working with you is more important to the investor than, you know, doing other things in his day. It's about reshuffling the priorities of the VC.
Let's assume that you received a yes. One investor is interested, maybe a second and a third one. How do I communicate if there's kind of a triangle of interests, like many different actors, let's say 2 to 4 or 3 to 5? How do I communicate? Because one of these guys wants a liquidation preference that's a little harder. The other one tries to work on the valuation. I mean, you have term sheets for that, obviously, but what would you recommend how to communicate with more investors that are interested, more than one?
The biggest question you have to answer is, when do you merge the processes? So because typically you want to have these conversations separate from each other until you get them to a yes, and either a yes with a term sheet or at least an oral yes. And then you have to merge the threads and figure out who can be a lead, who could be a follower, and who fits together with who. And maybe you try and form, let's say, 2 syndicates, 2 options. But you have to be careful when you do that, because the moment you have 2 investors talking about the opportunity, first of all, you take out competition because you have less people who are now independently vying to do the deal. And second, one might come up with things that actually reduce the conviction of the other. They might kind of have concerns that get bigger as they talk to each other. And you want to be very careful to not too early on merge those communication threads, but really wait until you have sort of a firm yes, and it's only about optimizing the terms. And then ideally you set the terms with the lead, and then you merge the other guys in there and say, guys, this is it. This is my lead. Are you in these terms?
How about the other way? If you received a no, if you've been passed, that's actually what I was talking about with Christian Nagel. He said, you know, it's always a tough deal for a VC. If I know that I won't invest in a company, how do I communicate with them? What's the ideal way for an investor to deal with a no and for a startup or a founder to deal with a no?
I mean, I think from an investor's perspective, as simple as it sounds, I mean, first of all, getting back in the first place is important, and providing some level of feedback. I think if it's something where you've only received the business plan and you determine based on that it's not a fit, you can't expect a detailed analysis from the investor. I think what you're going to hear is that it's not a fit for the portfolio, it's not a fit for the right stage. And then I think from the entrepreneur's perspective, there is little point in trying to argue about why specifically it should be a fit or not, because you have to assume, you know, there's hundreds of business plans coming in. And there is an initial screening, and if for whatever reason that you may not be aware of, you don't make it across the screening, it's hard to start arguing in detail. Now, it's different when you've had a meeting. I think when you've had a meeting or at least an extended phone conversation, I think what you should expect from the VC is to give you some reasons, some high-level items. That's at least what I try and do in terms of why it is not a fit, because I wouldn't have invested the time to have a meeting or a call if I didn't think it was generally interesting, right? So you want to ask for those, you know, 2-3 high-level items, and I think the VC should provide for them. Even then, though, I wouldn't overly start arguing with it as an entrepreneur, because I always expect the entrepreneurs to disagree with me. Otherwise, they wouldn't be, you know, running the company they're running, right? So yeah, it's natural that they disagree with you, but you don't want to have a discussion about who's right or wrong, because at the end of the day, early stage investing is a matter of faith and conviction. It's not black and white. So I think it's good to just take it the way it is, maybe point out if there are obvious flaws in the reasoning or misunderstanding. But beyond that, I think arguing isn't very helpful. The other thing I would say, though, is that if you do get an email after a meeting that just says, yeah, you know, sorry, we're not interested, then at least do ask for feedback. Yeah, if it's not detailed in the email or the phone call, do ask for a phone call and say, like, hey, thank you so much. Could we have a 5-minute call where you can maybe give me some feedback so I can improve my pitch with other investors. I think that's a very fair thing to ask for, and I'm surprised how few people actually do it.
Now, we talk a lot from a founder's perspective in a way, but our podcast has the name Inside VC, so I would also be interested in the VC perspective. This whole process before doing an investment, what's the view from a VC? What kind of communication strategy do you guys have? Because usually when someone sees, okay, someone is pitching to an investor, they have this image of an elevator, and you only have either 30 seconds or it's kind of a trial, right? If you look at these TV shows like Shark Tank, Dragon's Den, Höhle der Löwen, etc., it feels like a trial. But from my perspective, today this isn't the case anymore. Yet I'm really interested in how do you behave as an investor, because your time is really, really a limited resource in a way. Then Olaf Jacobi, who we had in our last episode, always says, from 1,000 pitches, I have to say 995 times no and 5 times yes. So this does something to you. Summing up this whole process from first contact to saying either yes or no, what's your view on communication from a VC perspective here?
The longer you are in this job, the more you quickly develop a sense of what could be a good deal, where you feel you connect with the founder, you get excited about the business, or if it's not the right fit. I think this is sort of this pattern matching, it's often called, that you develop over time. And so as an investor, if you feel that an opportunity is interesting to you, what you do is you relatively radically reprioritize your time to make sure you can dive deep into that. You suddenly become very reachable for that person and really try and very quickly build a relationship. That, I think, is how we think about it, where it's, in most of the cases, you quickly say no, and you don't want to have too many deals that you're sort of somewhat interested at the same time, because it just means you're spreading yourself too thin. And the trick is more to really engage with the very few where you initially sense that you really like it, and then really focus on that.
Now let's say an investment happened. The contracts are signed. You're basically in the same boat. How does communication change? Maybe we could start with board meetings, because quite a few people learned out there, okay, there's something like an investment board or an advisory board or whatever you call it. How does this work?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, when we talk about the first board meeting after an investment, we always say that's the come to Jesus meeting, yeah? Because you really, you know, that's when the facade sort of drops. And you really get the inside view about what's going on in the company, at least ideally. So the entrepreneur switches from selling you to having you on his side of the table and asking for your support in building the business and, you know, solving problems and all of that. So the only advice I would have there is be as transparent as possible, be as open as possible, because you are truly aligned. You know, the investors are now your shareholders. And there is no point in, you know, withholding certain problems or issues, because the biggest thing that you need to look for now is maintaining a high trust level. That is what's going to be most valuable in your relationship with your investor going forward. The easiest way to damage that trust, or to make sure it never maybe even gets built, is to not talk about problems and then have them pop up later on when it's clear that it should have been brought up earlier. However, the flip side is true. If you do mention problems early on, it does help to build trust, because it shows that you're transparent, you're giving people the full view, and you consider them on your side of the table.
My experience with VCs often is that they're always interested in the great news and would like to focus on that, like how do I accelerate further? And as soon as you tell them, you know, we have this and that challenge or this and that problem, this won't work because of X, Y, Z, you kind of feel like a stepping on the brake in a way, right? Is this a misperception? Does it really make sense to name every problem in detail and say what exactly is happening to the company? Because also valuation is also a topic for quite a few founders, I guess, that they are afraid of telling bad news and later on the valuation drops in the next round.
Yeah, but you know, you re-enter the sales process when you raise the next round and you're trying to get, again, a new investor to price. Mm. It's not your internal investor who's pricing the round. So there is not really a problem there. Of course, you don't only want to be talking about problems, but at the end of the day, your best way to get value out of your investor is to get help. Mm. And you don't need help on the things that are already working, Stellar. You need help on the things that aren't working, right? So I think it's just important to highlight those things where you think you could do better obviously you don't want to sort of have a melancholic board meeting where you're only talking about all the negative things. That's clear. But I do think it's important to highlight the areas where you could do better, and you could do better with the help of your investors and make them do some work for you.
Speaking about the board meeting again, what frequency does make sense? How is it organized? How should I communicate in advance and after it and during it? What's your advice here?
So it depends a little bit, you know, just from a very practical point of view on how many investors you have and if they're local or if they're, you know, far away. But I would say on average, a board meeting every 2 to 3 months is a good frequency. And I would probably do them more the younger the company is and the fresher the relationship is. And then, you know, over time you can space them out a little bit more. So that's important. Then, you know, there's lots of templates out on the web as to how you can structure these meetings. I think it's just important to give a 360 view of the company and also make sure you leave enough time for discussion and strategic discussions with your investors. Then I think finally, the other important point is if you have important decisions to make, you really should try and call your board members before the meeting. I always think of good board meetings as those where you actually don't decide anything, but you just confirm what has been discussed before. Because as a founder, you probably have a clear recommendation and you just want to avoid that a discussion goes off sort of, you know, in the wrong direction. So it's good, especially if you have surprises or things that have developed very differently from what people would have expected, prepare your board members for it. The one thing you don't want in a board meeting is surprises. So that's very important to remember. Investors don't like surprises. They want to be prepped and they want to have a chance to think about it. You know, try and send the board materials, the deck or whatever you're using, try and send it ideally 2 days before, a day before, whatever is still fine, but do send it out before. And if there are important things that have come up, just give your board members a call before the meeting.
As far as I know, many founders fear of being controlled by their investors, like loss of control, being told what to do. Is this a relevant risk?
Well, I would like to say no. I mean, you know, I think it obviously depends on who your investors are. And there are certainly some that might have that tendency. I have to say, the vast majority of VCs that I've worked with prefer companies where you have a strong founder who knows what he wants, asks for help when he needs it, but is the one that we have decided to back because we believe that this person can run the company and obviously can run it better than us, right? We're not operators, we're investors. So from that perspective, VC is so fundamentally different from private equity or late stage investing where you do bring in new management and that kind of stuff. We don't like to do that. We want the founders that we invested in to ideally continue operating the business. Maybe in some cases, there is a point when the company has reached a certain size where some type of founders that really like small teams and, you know, experimenting early on, then, you know, it makes sense to bring in somebody who's more experienced and so on. But in general, I think there is no, let's say, interest per se from the VCs to exert control or anything of that kind. Because it would mean admitting that we've made a mistake in backing the person, because our judgment at the time of the investment is that this is the right person to build this company.
How about arguments in the team, by the way? Is this something you should discuss with your investor as well?
I think that's something where an investor can actually play a good role, because you're sort of at a good distance from the company. You're close enough to know sort of what's going on. You know the individuals involved. But you're also far away enough that you don't know of the day-to-day sort of almost politics within a team. You don't know some of the personal issues that may be there between people. So you can actually be almost like a coach when it comes to solving problems in the team and have sort of an outside-in view. We've done that repeatedly. I sometimes feel like I should have gotten a minor in psychology maybe, because especially when teams are larger, there is really interesting dynamics that start to happen. But no, it's something that you absolutely should talk about. You shouldn't hide it. It does happen in teams. It's not something that you are the first company where this happens. So it's not going to be a complete surprise, even if that person a couple of weeks before was pitching the company. It just does happen in teams. And so it's just another thing where it's good to be transparent.
What I also witnessed is sometimes the danger of you know, on children's playgrounds, there are these things, I think it's called a rocker, right? If one moves up, the other one moves down. And I quite often had the impression that it may happen that an investor, a VC, talks to one member of the team, says the one thing, and then the other one, you know, gets different information, so that they kind of sit on a rocker in a way, different information levels, kind of a manipulation technique. Whether it's intended or not, is this a relevant danger and something that you witness often, or is it rather rare?
So, I mean, you got to remember that VCs are in the information business, right? I mean, our business is about learning which companies are doing well, you know, which founders are doing something interesting. So we're always hunting for nuggets of information, much like journalists, actually. So, you know, from that point of view, it's quite similar. You have to assume that to some extent, if you're talking especially to several investors during a fundraising process, word is going to get out. They are going to talk among themselves, you know, over lunch, whatever. This is a small world. Investors know each other. Some of them know themselves for a long time. So there's a high level of trust between them. So do assume that, let's say, it's hard to keep something under wraps, especially if you talk to several investors. Having said that, I do think, especially once people have invested in your company, if you tell them that certain things are confidential, I would be shocked if people were disseminating that type of information. I think you have to be able to trust your investors to kind of keep their mouths shut when they have to. But just be careful when during a fundraising process, when talking to a lot of parties, you can get a lot of chatter there.
Yeah, but this is external. Does it also happen that a VC talks to different members of the MD team and tells them different stuff and tries to manipulate them?
Oh, I'm not sure, not very frequently, because to be honest, it crystallizes that over time you usually have just mostly one person that you talk to on a regular basis, and then that is your main point of contact where you have the highest trust level and so on. So it naturally becomes hard, even if you wanted to sort of, you know, play people against each other just because you usually have one preferred relationship. I'm also not sure what would be the goal. Maybe you want to get different perspectives from different members of the team. Yes, that's true. But if you try from the outside to manipulate, you're always going to lose because you're always farther away.
The aspect you mentioned answering that question before, investors being chatterboxes, I also witnessed that quite a few founders have trust problems in a way. I even witnessed some of them saying, hey, we give out different information pieces to see who is the leakage here, like where does the information flow out? And also they are afraid of VCs having their own agenda. One is trying to, you know, focus on different players in his portfolio. One is looking for an exit. The other one is trying to reduce valuation for the next round, such stuff. How do you deal with it? I mean, having a lack of trust or these fears?
Well, as an entrepreneur, I mean, you're in a tough spot if you feel you don't trust your investor. It really makes it hard because you're married through the cap table of the company. So first of all, I would actually, this may sound a little naive, but I would actually try and really address it with the investor. If there's things where you feel that a specific agenda has been put forward, because every investor, especially when they're on the board, they don't only can follow their interests as investor, they also have a fiduciary obligation to the company to do what's best to the company, which you might want to remind your investor of. If you really feel that you have a trust issue and you cannot resolve it that way, you just want to then switch in a mode where you communicate as little as possible and, you know, hold information a little closer to your chest if you really feel that it's somebody who's either not acting in the best interest of the company or just not being trustworthy.
Let's assume the positive case. What do you guys do to transfer knowledge? Because obviously, a VC has a big portfolio with a lot of knowledge, whether it's tools, techniques, management styles. I heard about US investors who even do kind of concierge services for startups, that they're kind of a database or information exchange program. What is usual here? What is normal from a VC perspective? Does this happen to engage knowledge transfer between portfolio companies?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Because I think, you know, one of the great things about having a portfolio is that people run into similar problems. And there is a lot of value in learning about how other companies have solved them, right? So one of our jobs is, and that's what board meetings are good for and why I said, you know, it's important to highlight the issues, is to identify what are things in a company where it might make sense for them to talk to the founders of another one. We do events for that kind of thing and general networking, but it does come down also to then the individual person on the board or who takes care of that particular company coming back into our internal group and saying like, hey, who knows about this or that? And we have a, you know, every month we have a full portfolio review where we go through all the companies and then we discuss all these things. And that's where you tap into the collective knowledge of the entire firm. Besides that, our specific case, we have a support program for the companies. For example, you know, Luis Hahnemann, the former Rocket Chief Marketing Officer, he's responsible for helping companies on operational issues like performance marketing and things like that. So we do have some experts either in-house or in our network that we repeatedly pull in to help companies on specific issues. But beyond that, connecting their portfolio companies, again, through networking events or individual, you know, sort of one-to-one connections based on a certain topic, I think that's one of the key value adds that you get from a good investor.
I can totally imagine that supporting with HR or marketing insights or such stuff is by now something that's really necessary to gain a great deal flow and to get to great investments. But maybe last question here, what about follow-on financings? Like, how does communication change if a founder has a set of investors and is now trying to raise a new round? What would you say does make sense here, and what changes?
In a way, that's a great bonding experience with your investor, right? Because suddenly, you know, your interests are now fully aligned. You both want to make sure there's good outside lead coming in, ideally at a high price. You suddenly have the VC sort of really rooting for you. And that's a great way to really be team players, because it can create a lot of value. So first of all, a VC does these things at a very high frequency because they have a portfolio, and you as an entrepreneur only do it, you know, once a year or whatever. So you want to tap into the VC's network of potential follow-on investors and, you know, ask your investor for introductions to those. Then once you are in process with them, you want to use your VC as a back channel for making sure, let's say, you've had that first meeting, you haven't heard from the guy, you ask your investor to call him if he made the intro and say like, hey, I sent you company X, what do you think about it? It's another way, through another channel through which you can address concerns that the VC might have and understand sort of the true reason why he's not engaging. Really go for that, and then your investor can be extremely helpful in strategizing around, if you have several folks who are interested, you know, how do you really play them? How do you make sure you synchronize the timeline? How do you get them to put independent offers on the table? How do you then merge those? All these things that we touched on earlier. Just use the VC, because he'll have experience in that. He'll be doing it a lot of times. So it's just something where it really makes sense to work together very, very closely. Those are usually the periods where you talk to your founders often several times a day, because you're sometimes even optimizing email wording, or hey, should I now send a text? Should I call the guy? Should I send an email? Or should I wait another half day? Is it too eager if I do it now? Or, you know, all these kind of things. It's nuances. It's, again, where you need the minor in psychology. Yeah. But it's something where you can really create value if you work together in the right way.
Yeah, I was about to say the psychologist comes out again in that situation.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, cool. So we learned a VC is kind of a psychologist, a strategic mind, a great communicator, hopefully. Thanks for sharing all this knowledge.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening.